Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. September 29, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter September 29, 2020. In our time only love will save us, meaning unity above all the differences. Even if there is nothing I love about my child, I still love him. Love does not follow any rules, love will cover all sins. This is the kind of love we have to learn. Balha Sulam, Letter 13. Try to see the friend's merits and not their flaws, to unite together with them in true love, till the state where love will cover all sins. Balha Sulam, Letter 4. May you have no deficiency other than to collect all the parts that have broken away from your soul, and unite them into one body. Into this perfect body, the Creator will place His presence forever. And the spring of great wisdom and the upper rivers of light will be like a limitless source. Balha Sulam, The Last Generation. Life's aim is to merit adhesion with the Creator by scrupulously observing the condition of acting only for His benefit. Or to qualify many so they may reach adhesion with Him. Balha Sulam, Preface to the book Panimed May Rot Who Must Be Rot, Item 22. A person does not live for himself, but for the entire chain as a whole, such that every link in the chain does not receive the light of life inside it, but only conducts the light of life to the entire chain as a whole. Balha Sulam, Letter 49. I instruct you to exert all your forces to begin to love one another and to take part in one another's suffering, and to rejoice in one another's joy, as much as possible. I hope you'll fulfill these words and will comply with them entirely and perfectly. The epidemic will end when we finish it. Every day we hear on the news about millions of coronavirus cases and thousands of deaths. The pandemic continues to spread and there is no end in sight. At first, we hoped that a couple of weeks would pass and the epidemic would end. But no one thinks so today. They are starting to say that there is no cure for the coronavirus and that most likely we will not be able to create a vaccine. There will be some mitigation but there will be no real protection. There have already been examples of such diseases. Either they return regularly or they are constantly circulating between us. Therefore, we should not hope for the end of the pandemic, which, as it is now assumed, will come in a year or two. It will end when we finish it. It depends not on time but on our work. The world suffers from a lack of food, money, and pleasure. But if we want a good life in which there will be all the best things, we must know the laws of nature and fulfill them properly. The primary law of nature is an integral dependence, which means that we are in a single organism. If a part of the body is broken, it suffers and the whole body suffers. But the state of humanity is such that we are all split, separated from each other, from mutual good bestowal. Therefore, we are like a broken body that has no way to come back to life. So we must take care of our connection. This is called proper ecology, the integrality of nature manifested at all its levels. We must connect with each other correctly because nature obliges us to do so. Nature says, "Do you want money, respect, health, food, and entertainment? I have it all for you. Only pay." With what question mark with your connection? From Daily Kabbalah Lesson 0 September 24, 2020, concerning above reason. Yom Kippur, request for correction. In the process of spiritual development, there is a special state called Yom Kippur, from the word Kepara, atonement, which means the correction of all sins that one has repented for and asked for correction. After all, it is clear that we can't correct anything ourselves, and the sins we have committed are not ours at all because it is the Creator who created the evil inclination that controls us, and makes us, transgress. It is not our fault that we are in egoism that each time forces us to think only of ourselves rather than others or the Creator. Therefore, both sins and their correction are not our fault or our merit because the Creator does everything. He prepared all sins for us, and all the corrections for them, while we are between them like in a vice. Our job is to attribute everything to the Creator, both sins and corrections. We only connect sin with correction to the extent that we realize and feel both of them come from the Creator and not from us. The Creator is above the transgressions and the corrections, it is a special upper force that is above everything. Therefore, Yom Kippur is a day of special joy that allows us to rise even higher above creation and connect with the upper force to achieve its level. All the sins, all the egoism, made by the Creator, and the corrections achieved because of it, are necessary in order for us to understand the level that is higher than the evil and good inclinations, that is, to understand the Creator who cannot be attained any other way. The Creator is separated from all of creation, and His essence can only be attained in this way by going through all our disunity. By connecting with each other, we connect with the Creator. We rise above sin, above reward and punishment, and make these corrections only in order to reach the Creator who is separated from all of creation. The Creator prepared all these states for us, so that we can attain Him, the One, unique, and only. Yom Kippur is the main symbol of the process of attaining the upper force that is detached from all of creation. Without uniting and without concern about the whole world kli, about mutual help, about all of humanity, it is impossible to achieve even the smallest spiritual revelation. All nations are destined to rise above their individual egoism and return to the system of Adam HaRishon to become one person, one desire. Yom Kippur is a spiritual state in which a person reveals that his sin is believing that he was the one who sinned and not realizing that everything comes from the Creator. That is, he has not admitted that there is none else besides him. He thought that he did everything himself and evaluated his thoughts and desires inside his egoism. But now a person wants to correct his mistakes and all the impure scrutinies that are not connected with the One, unique, and unified upper force. This is what he prays for and asks of the Creator. This is the essence of the Day of Atonement. It is the day a person wants to redeem and correct all the states and scrutinies that he could not attribute to the upper force. All our work is in attributing everything that happens in the world to the upper force and in considering ourselves to be only a creation 100% controlled by this force. The ascent up the 125 spiritual degrees is identifying ourselves even more with the upper force until we come to the total adhesion with it. When we fully correct the Kelim, which the Creator intentionally broke, and raise it to His level, then we will be ready to begin the true path in understanding and adhesion with the Creator. But these are the mysteries of the final correction. When we achieve this all together, all the creatures that are now in this world and those that are not here, we will advance further and find out what the Creator has prepared for us, after the general correction. Yom Kippur is when we reveal that not only good but also evil comes from the Creator, and they are of equal value. A person should bless for evil as well as for good because through both of these forces one attains adhesion with the Creator. Adhesion with the upper force is our common and only goal, therefore, any states we go through should be perceived as an invitation to adhere. It doesn't matter what I feel or what happens in my mind, heart, body, or relationships, it shows me where I can increase and strengthen my connection with the upper force. The meaning of fasting on Yom Kippur is that we act only by the power of faith, not by the power of receiving. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson September 26, 2020, Yom Kippur. Evil rules the world. Remark, 75 years have passed since the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Hundreds of thousands of lives were lost. Children, elderly, completely innocent people who did not participate in the war. This humanity does not learn anything. The number of countries with nuclear weapons has increased. Today they no longer talk about disarmament. Before there was a period of signing agreements. Not today. Today China is threatening India, India is threatening China, America is threatening China, and so on. Everyone rattles their weapons. I understand when soldiers converge and fight each other, or armies fight each other, tank against tank, aircraft against aircraft. But here is also something mean, you are bombing the civilian population. My comment, this is the law of war. Does anyone adhere to other laws and rules? How many gases and toxic substances are being developed? We do not even know that yet. Both before and now. It has always been this way. They just talk more, talk less. Evil rules the world. God forbid, but we can still see it all. Question, will bans not help? Will agreements not help? Answer, nothing. Question, is the elimination of nuclear weapons also impossible, as I understand it? Answer, impossible. How can you destroy it? Do you know who in the world has it today? Question, is the world stuffed with weapons of destruction? Answer, of course. Question, will it be packed with them even more? Answer, nobody is holding us back. Who can accomplish that? You do not hold back selfishness, so this is the answer. Here we need serious hope for a higher power, including the coronavirus, which would gradually sober us up. Question, what should it tell us? Answer, that there is no other way, just lay down your arms and begin to engage in good communication with each other, completely new opportunities are opening up for humanity. It is absolutely impossible to follow the previous paths. Neither thought, nor reason, nor feelings, nothing. Everything that was before was built on absolute egoism, and we can no longer use it. There is only one thing left, look at the ego as an enemy and at the neighbor as a friend. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, August 3, 2020. Management and leadership. Question. Comparative analysis of a leader and a supervisor or manager makes it possible to better understand their functions. The manager, supervisor, supports, while the leader develops. The manager focuses on systems and structure, the leader focuses on people. The manager relies on control, the leader inspires confidence. The manager asks how and when, while the leader asks what and why. The manager looks at the profit. The leader looks to the future. The manager does things right. The leader does the right things. Do you agree with these statements? Answer, in general, this is true. You can add that the leader is a philosopher, the one who paves the way, while the manager executes, knowing how to organize the necessary team on the spot to perform specific tasks. It may even be a head of state. A manager has the ability to set goals correctly and specifically. These goals must be measurable because what cannot be measured cannot be controlled. A leader has the ability to see the future and pass this vision on to his subordinates, managers, who turn it into concrete plans, specifications, and work on implementation. Question, is the leader's vision a natural skill or can it be acquired? Answer, people are born with it. They are born as leaders, or as good executives, or managers. These are completely different mindsets, psychologies, and perceptions of the world. A manager is engaged in planning activities, time constraints, determining responsibilities and priorities. A leader is not only responsible for the results, but also bears personal responsibility, he inspires and motivates. From CAB.TV's Management Skills, June 11, 2020. Confidence and truth will work. Question. The crew of an Argentine ship were tested for the coronavirus. The results were negative and they did everything as required. The crew quarantined themselves for 2 weeks before setting sail. During the voyage, they did not come in contact with other people and after several weeks at sea some of the crew members fell ill, the ship returned to port, and almost all of them were sick with coronavirus. What happened on the ship? Answer, nothing happened. It is just that the virus is in the air. Question, could it have happened on the ship? Answer, if they were all connected with each other by serious, strong ties, not just as a ship crew but more than that, then they would have defeated the virus. This virus is clearly anti-egoistic. If this team was gathered by friendly ties and they wanted to be together as one man, the virus would not affect them. If they wanted that, then their desire would have won out. It would have created a field around them that repels the virus. Question, does that virus find this hole, which is called we are separated, and enter through it? Answer, of course. Question, what is the first thought that should come to a person who encounters some kind of a problem? Answer, where are my friends, comrades? Where are my war buddies, my battle companions? It is in this way that everything should operate. Question, so that they would help me, this kind of thought? Answer, in order for me to help them. Question, even despite the state I am in? Answer, I only recover when I help them. Question, does it mean that the vector should be directed from me outward? Answer, yes. Even if I think about making them and not myself healthy, I really will be able to overcome any problem. Question, what if each of the crew of the Argentine ship would have thought about the other, even when they got sick? Answer, then they all would have recovered quickly. Question, if a person, despite the fact that he is ill and has the coronavirus, thinks about the other so that the other does not get sick, does he recover? Answer, yes. This is the test. This is confidence in the truth, in verity. Question, should they have confidence then that everything will work? Should it live within them? Answer, even if it does not. I am dying, but I will prove it, this is exactly what I want to demonstrate. If I am thinking about the other, it cannot be that I will die. However, I am not doing this to avoid dying. That is, my confidence in this law, that if I do everything for the benefit of others, then I cannot in any way harm myself or others, is the highest. This is a law of nature. From CapTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, July 20, 2020. Guide for Round Tables, Part 10. Round Table, Need for an Educational Base. Remark, the further we go, the more I understand that the method of round tables, which is used in many industries, requires a lot of training. Before you put people in circles, you need to give them some kind of educational course. Today, we can offer a round table just to strengthen connections but not to resolve serious conflicts at the national level. My comment, you can't put together a round table of members of the Knesset. First, they must go through a long period of training and re-education. Only then can they be seated at a round table. Only then will they be able to develop truly reasonable state decisions. Question, can circles be used just to strengthen connections? Answer, what does to strengthen connections mean? If they end correctly and if they finish in determining some disagreements, reservations, then why? Remark, but we have already held round tables in the masses and people felt quite mutually involved and happy. My comment, maybe they were pleased that they expressed their point of view. But whether they listened to others at the same time is a question. In any case, it is desirable that they have a strong educational base. From CapTV's Management Skills, July 9, 2020. New Life 591. Back to Nature.
Hello, and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of educational talks with Rav Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Rav Leitman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Shadarel. Hello. Today we want to return to nature. We want to ask you to join us. It's a big trend in Israel and around the world. We'll try to understand it a bit better. Yael, please. So today there is a tendency that is growing in the past years to return to natural things, less modern, less artificial things. You can also see it in medicine, natural medicine, homeopathic medicine, as opposed to the conventional medicine of chemicals and natural foods instead of processed foods. And also in our environment, there's going back to more natural materials, wood, warmer materials. We can also see it in the way women give birth. There's talk about natural birth instead of birth with epidural. And even in regard to plastic operations, people search for something more natural instead of the bombastic approach we had in recent years. And we feel that there is a desire to return to natural. Why? Do more and more people today want to return to nature? Where does this trend come from? First of all, let's go a bit back into history and understand the current tendency. We see that throughout life, a person used to both nourish himself and heal himself by the environment, by what he had around him. It's heat and cold and plants and what he gets from animals and from the air and the forest and everything there was. And today, people know how to use this. A person was closer to nature. There was less pollution. There was no pollution until the diesel engine, fuel engine was invented and so on. Because even the steam engine wasn't that pollutant. You burn wood or coal. But all in all, it wasn't that air polluting. And also, there was no chemicals in foods. Food was natural. Chicken, fish, everything grew naturally in nature. And people used to catch them, prepare them, and use them. This changed in the past 100 years, even less. To be more specific, than from the 40s, it started in the 40s. Well, the medicine industry started before, but also, doctors in the past, they weren't distant from nature, they weren't far from it, and most of the medicines they got from nature. And we can see the medicine books. When I travel to different places in the world, I like going into reservations. So suppose in Hungary, in Canada, in different such places, old villages that were left this way. People no longer live there, but the village, it remains as kind of like a park, like a reservation. Yeah. And so you have the doctor's house there, the house in which the doctor lived. So next to his house, there is a piece of land where he grows different herbs, and how he used to keep these things at home, how he used to dry it all and prepare it. You see an entire industry. And usually the doctor, he was very rich because everyone needed him, and he really knew what to do, because if you don't know what to do, no one needs you. And this is how it was in every village, in every place, even in the smallest places, there was someone who engaged in it, and it was passed on from generation to generation, and everything was taken from nature. And we really see that animals, they heal themselves. from nature. A dog goes out with his master from their apartment on the 20th floor and immediately goes to look for some plant, for some plant to eat, for some grass to eat. He looks for it because he feels that he needs it. He feels from nature that it's a must, that it's a need for his body. And by body, we're also animals. And therefore, it's a shame that we distanced from it. Of course, it would have been easier and more convenient in our times were we to replace everything with different plants and so on for the better. And not only plants, also with things from the still, vegetative, inanimate, if we could really replace these things, switch these things. But we don't really know or understand these things correctly, and therefore we see that it doesn't work, even though that it's good and convenient. Without what we have today, I don't think that I can't imagine how a big city goes out into some forest to look for some weeds, who knows what and how. Today it's impossible. But just like with any other development of ours, where we wanted the technological development so much to build a lot and do a lot, and we thought that it will give us success and good development and thriving, and suddenly, for the past few decades, we're coming to a state where we're not really that sure that our development is for the better. We see so much phenomena which is not that pleasant, even though that we tend to accept them and then to agree with it all and then not even to identify these things. That's a part of us. But nonetheless, we see that after all the development we see in technology, in medicine, in family life, in education, in everything, we see that we crossed some hilltop because we thought that that's it, only forward and upwards, and suddenly we see that, no, we're unbalanced. We as if are inclined in a certain direction and it's unbalanced. We've exaggerated in a certain direction, yes, in some bad direction, and we have to make self-scrutiny and maybe advance through some middle line, so not to completely leave the natural medicine and not to turn to industry for everything. But we, our bodies aren't becoming more sophisticated. We're not turning into some extraterrestrial beings. Our body remains the same. And therefore, it's good for us to allow it some kind of connection to nature, that it's truly needy of it. And therefore we see that in everything, we see that we want to return. We have this kind of an inclination to return to things that in the past were next to us. And then we as if distanced ourselves or these things from us. And today we feel again that maybe it's worthwhile returning to them. These are more natural things that are next to us. Wood, glass, leather, fur, different such things, natural fabrics. Even if we look at the form of things, today even lamps. We make them like they used to look 100 years ago. And we have more of a feeling towards things which were more natural, closer to us, where modernism today is felt by us as something emotionless. There are no feelings in it. It's all cold, flat. Forms that don't evoke any good attitude in us. And therefore the world, eventually, in all realms, after it passed this hill in its development, starts understanding that you can't do anything. A person has to feel convenient, comfortable, and his environment should be more ergonomic. Ergonomics is a science about how do we create a comfortable environment for people. I can't build a table 2 meters high, and I can't build a chair that'll be like, I don't know, I need to publish a book so it will be comfortable, so it'll sit comfortably in my hand. My shoes, they can't be 40 centimeters longer than my foot, but something normal, meaning however much I want to make something original, nonetheless, it returns to good, comfortable, convenient that fits a person's body. The person is the center of creation, and we have to make everything to suit him. And therefore, the more we advance, there is a limit to our advancement. We don't need a jet for every person. We need a house, a nice garden, a lake, maybe. Someone maybe also needs a small boat. Someone needs to live next to a small forest. We will want to return to these different forms that fit our body, which is on the animalistic level. And therefore, whatever novels will be written about jumping between stars, it won't help. I don't want to jump to the stars. I want to have something to relax my soul with next to my house. And this is what we see, that the world is now discovering a tendency back towards nature, returning to nature, let's call it that way. And it's felt in everything, and it's not in vain that we see on different boxes that this is without different additives, chemical substances, and the things they write there. This is something that's appealing to people today. And I think that this is how it's going to happen with each and everything, up to the point where we will return to real bread and real flesh and real everything. That as much as we're told that it's impossible according to quantities and so on in doing it, I think that we'll still find the path how to grow everything without antibiotics and drugs and so on. There's a feeling that I really feel everything you're saying, and there's a feeling that the disconnection from nature, and many times it disbalances humanity, and there's a feeling that we humans have ruined something, and if we go back to nature, it'll correct the feeling of alienation, of artificialness. At least, I feel that that's how it is. And the feeling is that if we go back to nature, It'll be the correction of the damages that man made before, and we'll return to the healthy, right source of things, to a healthy life, to greater happiness, joy. For this, we have to change many things. Because we want to build something new in the old world and to take something old into the new world. And it doesn't really work because you can't build a city for 20 million people in the way it was before. It's impossible. What? We'll build a 2,000 kilometer village in diameter, and it's as if unrealistic. There'll be more roads there than houses. It's irrational. We still have to think, how can we combine the ergonomic approach, meaning that which suits, fits man's body, with all of our technologies, with all of our demands, that still we won't do it like it was in the past, building an oven in our yard and cooking everything there. It no longer fits. So how do we do something in a new way? We have to think about it. I never thought about it. But returning to nature, the way I see it, it's very respectable. There is time and place for it. And I hope that we won't only return to nature corporeally wise and in terms of medicine and foods and so on, but so it will also be in terms of a person's soul, so that he'll feel that he has to return to nature, he has to connect with all of nature, that he is actually an inseparable component of nature, with all the forces and laws that exist in nature. He has to keep them too, out of his own free choice. Both our body, we have to allow our body to exist in the right and free way as much as possible, and it's possible for sure, even though that we're already 8 billion, may there be 10 billion, doesn't matter, but that we have to give each and every person the ability to be as close to nature as possible with all the modern form that we don't want to give up. This is really a problem that we have to deal with, because the more we distance from nature, the more we feel we suffer. We distance, we think that it's good, artificial, nice, we have everything by the push of a button. Then I feel, no, the push of a button creates more problems than when I used to do it with my hands. And then here, you have to find a certain balance. And also returning to nature so that it will pull us also into the internality of nature, that we'll start feeling that we, as humans, have to find nature's inner force and to connect to it, not only in body, but also in soul, where the forces immersed in nature have to be revealed to us, and we'll start feeling nature's inner language, which is actually the godly language of the upper force that exists in nature and controls it, and also controls us that way, and the nature of the still vegetative inanimate, and our body, which also belongs to the still vegetative inanimate, will be as the transitional force, as something that matches between us and a more inner force, a force that's immersed within nature, a program, the upper force, godliness that exists in nature, that this way we'll start feeling in nature itself, in the still, vegetative, animate, from within ourselves, from our body and deeper in, we'll start feeling a connection to godliness. We'll start understanding His language, the way He speaks to us. And this way, returning to nature, we'll really start discovering our real life, eternal as nature, supreme like godliness. What's the connection, if you can explain a bit, the connection between godliness and nature? That through nature, we can discover godliness. Like it says about Abraham, our patriarch, that he used to go out at night and look at the stars, and he used to see nature around him and ask, where is this upper force that created it all and sustains it and controls it and wants to tell me something through it now? But what does he want to say? I want to hear him, and I can't. I have, like, plugs in my ears or in my heart that I have to open up and hear and feel. And how do I open them up? Until it was revealed to him that the big plug that plugs a person's perception is his ego. And if he rises above the ego and he starts relating with love, with bestowal, with giving, like all of nature, he starts seeing that all of nature is controlled by the force of love and bestowal, and this force speaks to him through everything that there's around. And this is what I think, that our return to nature, our tendency to return to nature, we're not talking about more natural foods or against a pitteral or against artificialness, but actually we have an inner tendency to discover this inner force of nature, godliness, that only through connection with it will we feel that we're really returning to nature. And let's hope that we'll be able to do it quickly and in a good way. And so it won't be that we did a cycle and problems and despair brought us a bit back, but that we'll understand that we needn't distance from nature, but along with delving into nature, we could invent a good, nice, and comfortable life for ourselves so that we won't lose anything from technology if it goes hand in hand with cleaving to nature's internality and to godliness. Why is it so important not to distance from nature? Because we're losing balance, and then it costs us dearly. We start feeding ourselves with different kinds of foods that isn't food, but it's really processed wood. We can make everything out of plastic today. We can print food on a 3D printer, ice cream, meat, wine, milk, and everything, make it out of the same cartridge, which is completely chemical. And to eat it and really think that it's chicken with rice, with things, and nice wine, and all the salads, and it was all made out of some one substance, that the only thing that you have there is this, that mass of matter, and the rest is taste and smell additives, all artificial. We can do it. And from the same substance, the same matter, I can also make a chair and a table and food for myself and everything. Maybe someone can say, what, it's great. We're on the verge of a breakthrough and such human development, but it's untrue. Going only in the direction of artificialness like we are now, we're losing our form. We're not, how to put it, we're not becoming better, nicer, more beautiful, more internally rich. We're all in all becoming more machine-like. Like soon we'll make our children out of 3D printer, out of that same cartridge. Our time's almost up, so let's hope that we're returning to nature. And this is really what I wanted to finish with. In your eyes, returning to nature is what? To the internality of nature and godliness, which includes everything. And then it's not opposed to the entire technological development, but it balances the technological development that will keep on the middle line, the golden path. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. Thank you, Yael. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
New Life 634. Giving.
Hello, and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Rav Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Rav Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. Today, we'd like to speak about a topic that will bring a smile to our face inside the hard day-to-day life we're experiencing here in Israel. We'd like to talk about good deeds and giving. Yael, please. Given good deeds, we have a nation that has many associations, many charity organizations. This is a people, the Israeli people. It's a people that's based, that was founded on giving and good deeds, and we'd like to understand a bit better the topic of giving and good deeds today, and we'll start with the question of what's special about giving. Maybe even before the question, there's a nice quote by the sages that said, he who lights a candle from another candle, one enjoys and the other doesn't lack. And I'll explain. It means that if I have a candle and with it I light another candle, I took an action in which someone else got light, and I'm not lacking anything as a result, and it's a kind of a motto that explains the process of giving from one person to another. And the first question is, what is special about giving? The special thing about giving is that there is something about it that doesn't exist in any other action. Where we can pass on a good mood, the feeling of love, the feeling of warmth, and really, the person that does the giving doesn't lack anything as a result, meaning that a person who disperses the good and love to others, the warmth and others to others, he doesn't deplete himself, but he gets as if more and more of it from like an infinite source of warmth and love. And therefore, the act of giving is an act that you could increase, multiply, in infinite direction, parts, people, actions, and it's as if we're constantly aspiring, constantly drawing from an infinite source of force and love. What kind of connection is created between two people during the giving? According to the extent and the form, the way of giving, accordingly a person saws in the other his attitude, and the other as if receives it from him like a kind of a positive virus, and also wants to do the same. If the action is truly such, and a person shows others how much he enjoys giving, how pleasant it is, and how he comes out of himself and is in a complete act of giving, then even the greatest egoist will be envious of him. How could he be so happy, so joyful as a result of giving? Meaning giving, it's as if no one's really envious about it. But the action itself, the wholeness, the perfection, the fullness that a person feels, this is whatever he projects onto the other. And he as if publicizes that he is in the happiest, most state, free. And then, by that, he can truly obligate the other, because we're all egoists, and each is envious of others. And by that, he reveals positive hate in the other. You're saying that actually a person that's giving, that feels a sense of happiness, of freedom, you also said, how does giving influence, why does it have such a good impact over a person? It's as long as he feels importance, that he feels that this action is important. Suppose that he's helping, by doing so he helps needy people, and they feel in return some kind of a special feeling towards them. By that he corrects the world. He's the cause of good relations between people in his country. Maybe he just feels pain. It's like people who protect animals' rights. That someone's miserable, he's suffering as a result of something, and then he naturally, egoistically of course, but has this kind of a pity over people or animals, and then he does it. We see that there are people, that there are thousands that take to the streets to stop the slaughtering of cows, because by this we truly cause them sorrow. And how does a man who is stronger dominate a weaker species, and so on? You mentioned animals. It's something that's special only for people, the ability to give, the act of giving, or can animals do it too? It exists among animals in a special way, instinctively. We see that it exists, that suppose babies that suddenly fall into the hands of monkeys or dogs, they grow there. They grow with them. Adult dog gives her milk, and so on. There are such cases. But again, it's because on the animate level, these things exist towards the younger, towards the small, towards the weak to some extent. But man suffers more, and he's smarter, and therefore the suffering times the intelligence increases the suffering, and then he projects it upon himself, upon others, he starts participating in the sorrow of others. And then he wants to clear himself, cleanse himself of that sorrow, and that leads him to such actions where he causes good to others, mercy to others. And usually it happens because inside the person there is a desire to stop the regret. meaning to stop the sorrow. He's even ready to go on demonstrations and even kill people, and doesn't matter what happens, as long as he does mercy with what he thinks is the right thing to do, because it causes him suffering. You said to cleanse oneself of the sorrow of others. What does it mean? Because there are such people that can't stand that there are ill people. There are people that can't stand that there are abused babies or women. And it enters this way. Yeah, this is how a person is impressed by the suffering of others. And then, because he suffers, he's participating in that suffering, and even more than the person who's suffering himself, suppose that beaten up person or abused person, and then he's ready to do anything in order to get rid of that suffering. And then, egoistically, in order to get rid of that suffering, he is ready to cause an even greater suffering to someone else, just in order to arrange it so that he'll stop feeling the sorrow of the other. And therefore, we have to understand that all those forms, ways, and manners of action, as good and nice as they seem, beneficial, and really people are proud about them, but they all come from the egoism. Because if we, suppose, calm a person down so he won't feel sorrow as a result of the different things he sees in the world, but he won't feel sorrow inside himself, then, of course, he doesn't see it, doesn't hear it. And against these actions, he won't take any action. What happens when one gives to another? What happens to the giver and what happens to the receiver? The giver feels himself, he feels that he completes himself, that he is bigger, that he is stronger, that he is more complete, that he is higher than the one that he's giving to. And all the outcomes are which propel a person to take actions of bestowal. Or there's something else here, that the country will benefit, or a certain person or society will gain as a result, but still, internally, personally, even though he might not be aware of it, he feels that he is elevating himself, completing himself. And what happens to the receiver? The receiver, he also has an entire range of phenomena, where first of all he feels that there's someone who cares for him, warms him up. By that he could feel that he deserves to get help from others, because all in all he gave a lot to people, or all in all I'm called a citizen of this country, I'm called one of this human society that has to take care of me, and so on. Meaning, for the better and for the worse, he justifies himself egoistically, and possibly, if you operate on him correctly, he also starts feeling shame that he's receiving it and he doesn't pass it on. And maybe that when you come to him and you give him more and more, he stops being ashamed of it and he thinks that I deserve it. Why? The fact is that they're constantly coming and giving me. And this is how we actually make out of the people that receive. We create a lust for receiving in them, that it's no longer the matter of whether he has or doesn't, but he likes that He is given. He likes the feeling of being the receiver. He likes the supply, regardless what kind, and even if he doesn't need it. And maybe here there is lack of attention or something, or he likes the feeling of exploiting others, that he cries a bit, he asks a bit, and the others give him everything, and he has this feeling that by this he forced the others to care for him. You really gave a big range, and it's just a drop of everything that's happening. Starting with warming up the heart and giving me a feeling that I'm cared for, and really a feeling of security and a good feeling that fills the heart. Afterwards you said, I deserve it. Afterwards you said some kind of a shame that compels me to keep on giving and do good deeds to others. Up to a kind of a lust which is created of I like exploiting others for them to give me. I'm here, just give me all day long, everything. What does a person's response depend on? The dosage, the person, the giver. I'm not getting into that. And it's good that you told me up to here. I know more because we can talk about it for days. There's a very deep psychology here. And I say that it's limitless. The relations between people, even on our corporeal level. But I divide the relations between people into two levels. One level is that the giver is an egoist, and the receiver is an egoist. Both of them are from this world, from day-to-day life, and then each provides the other with different feelings, through objects, through different actions, doesn't matter. But this is actually where it all ends. And then I said that there is a variety of different forms to it, and intentions, actions, responses towards each other, and the action and response and intention of the first and the second response, and so on and so forth. And also from the person himself, and towards the organization, and who's that organization for a person. There are many things about it. And also we could talk about the charity organizations here, that we have many of them in Israel. And in the Jewish society, it's something very common, charity, that called Gemilut Chasadim, that this is something that I do because the Creator necessitates us to do so. I'll have this world and the next world, and it's worthwhile taking care of the ill, because then I won't be ill. And then you have faith and reward in this world and the next, for myself, for my kids. And so there are many, many things here that we can tell about. But again, I'm saying that all of it is because of the ego of one with respect to the ego of another. And there is giving and good deeds that here we're already talking on a higher level. It's without anything in return for myself, without any reward, without any payment. And here there's already a problem. What am I doing it then for? Well, suppose that I'm doing it just because I want for someone to get good as a result. For someone to get something good as a result. But when we investigate, research man's nature, we see that we are made out of matter, and this matter demands energy for any action. Even when I'm doing this with my hand now, my hand demands energy, fuel. And if I give something to someone without anything in return, then suddenly I discover that I can't make this move, that I don't have any energy, any fuel in return, any satisfaction, any fulfillment. And therefore, when we research our nature, when we investigate our nature deeply, we see that a person is incapable of giving to the other, that I simply take from myself and give it to another. Impossible that I continue an action from myself in order to make an action from myself to another. I have to take an action which demands energy. And where will I take this energy from? Where? I don't have a place to take it from if I have no compensation. Meaning that it's always has to be so. That's our nature. We're not to blame. We live in matter where for each detail there has to be a quant of light, of small energy, a particle of an atom, doesn't matter what. Particles and atoms have to revive in my body and they need energy in order to take special actions. Some kind of an engine, yeah? And therefore, we're reaching a state where all of our actions need compensation. Meaning, whatever a person does, and it doesn't matter how he does it, and in what way does he do something, it all has to be with some kind of payment. And therefore we, who speak about different acts of bestowal, of giving, that we're disseminating, circulating warmth or attitude or objects. First of all, if we're doing research and we want to arrange these kinds of actions, we have to think, what do we cover them by? How do we compensate? How do we pay for these actions? Otherwise, they won't be able to exist. Meaning, let's say simply, business-like, and maybe even crudely, there are no acts of giving. A person always has to get some kind of a compensation, otherwise he is incapable of doing anything to begin with. Sometimes we give, and we expect some kind of a reward for it, and the reward didn't exactly come according to what I expected, and I regret that whole act of giving, and I curse it, and myself, and the people, and everything. Meaning, we see that there is a need for calculation and precision here. Therefore, good deeds, they can't exist on the level of this world. It's good that there are in society. Among all the lies in which we exist, these things exist too. But actually, we have to reach an action where maybe it's possible that we're giving without anything in return for myself. How could that be if we just said that our matter is incapable of doing it? So how is it possible to do that? It's possible to do it if we connect with the source of the upper force, but really connect with it, that we get energy from it. From whom? From the upper force, from the Creator. Who's the upper force? It's a special force which exists in nature, the force of giving, the force of bestowal, called the upper light, or called the reforming light, that gives the strength to take actions where I do things and I don't expect anything in return. I, as a secular, suppose, how do I connect to that force? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're religious or secular. The main thing is that I want to do an act of giving. My desire determines, and then there is a method of how can I reach such a deficiency, such a desire, that I will really want to give without anything in return for myself. Usually, it's possible to enlarge, increase this kind of deficiency, the desire to give, if I'm in this specific kind of society. And then if there are such people that all have this kind of an inclination, then we can warm each other up about the topic. And then each one of us can perceive these desires from the others to give, give, give. But how to give, and if I really want to give, meaning lovingly, out of love, without anything in return for myself, that means out of love. This is possible only if we achieve love thy friend as thyself. Because when I give myself, so to speak, then I have no problem to give myself. It's not even called giving. Then if I connect with others the way he and I are one and the same, then turns out that I could as if give him as if I'm giving to myself. Is this possible? And now, specifically, we can better understand the condition of love thy friend as thyself. That you can give the other just like you give yourself. Is that possible? You said that it's impossible a few minutes ago. Okay, so if I want to be in giving and bestowal in this way without anything in return for myself, but to see that the other is truly me, as one man in one heart, in one body, truly so. Suppose like a mother and her child, that it's really like that. Then I will be able, on this condition, I will be able to suddenly feel that I have a source of energy, an upper source of energy that also exists between us, and by it I will be able to bestow from myself onto others, where the other is like me now. I and he become as one now, and that source is the force between us, and we become as one. We can't already call that giving because we became as one. And this is the kind of state that we have to come to, meaning all acts of giving and good deeds which we cause in this world are in order to bring us to a state where we cause nothing good as a result, we have no good giving as a result, but we have to develop special actions of love towards others in us, like we do it towards ourselves, and it's egoistically. Loving the other as you love yourself, meaning check how much you love yourself, but also reach love towards others in the same way, in order to give them, to fulfill them the way you feel yourself, meaning to feel that you're together. By that, you do not breach the law of matter, meaning where you see that the other and you are the same body, one and the same, and as a result, you also get infinite abilities, energy, desire, thrust to bestow onto others. And this actually means that we have reached real good deeds. You confused me a bit. Yeah. But I wanted to put it in on purpose. So we'll have one show about it. So a real good deed is that first of all, love thy friend and yourself as yourself, and then you do good. Without love, there is no good deed. It's always the exploitation of another in some way. But that's also good in our world. You know, feeding people, healing them, and so on. It's also good. All the more, may everyone do that. But eventually they'll discover that it's all egoistic and is useless, but it only fills the people that do it, and therefore everyone will have to reach the real good deeds, which again are what, for conclusion, that first of all, it says that love the other, and to the extent to which you love the other, you can really bestow onto him. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. Thank you, Yael. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Join the integral system. Question. When someone provides me with some service, I can feel through it his emotional and moral attitude toward me. If I receive some products made by people I do not see and do not know, will I be able to feel them? Answer, it depends on our agreement. There should be a clear program, clear policy, clear social agreement in society that people will produce only what they need and provide it to everyone. Therefore, there should be common places established for producing necessary food, clothing, machinery, and so on. But the most important thing will be aiming at mutual education, revealing the internal forces of the integral system of nature in the correct connection between us. This will help us create our own integral system of human relationships, which will be similar to nature. Then we will be called Adam, from the word similar to nature. Question. What is better from the point of view of the internal laws of nature, to work for me, for the employer, or for the country? Answer, from the Kabbalistic point of view, it doesn't matter who you work for. It is because a person, society, country, the entire earth, and all of nature in general are one integral system. We need to be included in this system first out of necessity and then voluntarily by our will and with love. There are stages of our inclusion in the general system. Yet, it all begins with love for one's neighbor and extends to universal love for the entire nature, for the entire system of integral connection. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, June 4, 2020. For the sake of society, not for yourself. Question. Can you explain the principle of from each according to their abilities, to each according to their needs? Can we say that this is the main principle of the new economy? Answer, naturally. Society should give a person what is necessary for his normal existence, no more and no less. In return, it should require of him all possible participation in the life and prosperity of society. Do not measure the good of society by the growth of product output. If you have everything you need, there is no need to increase production. Man is the same animal. He needs as much as he can consume. Not more. He should not consume 5,000 calories today if he consumed 2,000 yesterday. The growth of social welfare does not consist in this, but in a greater connection between people, in order to reveal to each other the higher layers of nature. Remark, by saying this, you are cancelling Maslow's pyramid. It is clear that the rich can no longer eat and sleep in three beds. But behind basic needs, there is social growth of egoistic desires for honor, power, and knowledge. You cannot jump over them. My comment, it depends on your upbringing. When I use these means to benefit society, they will not be defined as power, knowledge, strength, fame, etc. It will be called something else because I do it for the sake of society. Question. What will a person enjoy? Answer. The fact that he will be respected not for power, but for working for others. He will evaluate his work in accordance with the assessment of society. Question. So, will the desire for wealth, power, and knowledge still remain? Answer. They will take on a different form, for the sake of society, not for their own sake. Question. Will the rich people still stay? Answer. No. There will be no rich people. Society will not allow itself to have such people. Moreover, a person brought up in a new environment will not want to be like this. Question. But the desire for knowledge will certainly continue. Scientists will be respected for their discoveries. What is the difference between today's scientists and the scientists of the future? What will drive them? Answer, those and others are working to satisfy their selfish desire for knowledge. It does not interfere with society. Anything that does not hinder society or allow it to move ahead toward greater integration is commendable. The public good should serve as a compass. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, June 4, 2020. Everything is aimed at connection. Question. The result of human labor is a product, a service, or information. Before a product reaches the consumer, it goes through dozens, if not millions of hands. For example, for me to drink a cup of coffee, probably millions of people invested their efforts in its collection and production. Can this somehow connect us with each other? Answer: if we understand how much we are connected with each other in determining a more or less normal, tolerable, or even good existence for everyone, we will appreciate each other. This should be demonstrated to everyone. Question: previously, people had organic farms and they ate what they grew in their garden. They did not have much contact with others. Today, if you look at household items, I think the whole world took some part in producing them. Is there some sort of deep meaning in this? Answer: from this example, we can see that we are better off communicating with each other so that we would provide for ourselves more easily. After all, in some places of the world it is good to produce, in others to extract, in others to process, and so on. That is, everything depends on the natural conditions. As it is written in the Torah, go and earn from each other. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, June 4, 2020.